yeah, I encourage everyone just to reach out into your own homes. You know, maybe it's a piece that, you know, your grandmother had in her home, or, you know, going even further back. You know, find out, you know, even about your immediate family, you know, why is this object in our family, and how is it connected to like the greater, you know, cultural history of even the past, you know, few decades. I think it's fascinating.
That's Genevieve Wheeler Brown, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Ahead, we'll talk about Beyond Blue and White, the hidden history of Delftware and the women behind the iconic ceramic. Genevieve Wheeler Brown is a decorative arts advisor, writer, and longtime specialist in the world of antiques and material culture. She has more than three decades of experience working with historic objects, including years at Christie's in New York and London, and appearances as an appraiser on Antiques Roadshow. Genevieve, welcome to Conversations.
Dan, thank you so much for having me. This is such a pleasure.
Let's start where you begin the book. Tell us about Delftware. What is it?
It is an iconic form of art from the Dutch Republic. I mean, maybe when I say the word Delftware, maybe you'll think of those square Dutch tiles, sometimes of a tulip, maybe a little figure. Or maybe you'll think of those fantastic pyramidal towers with little spouts holding tulips. I mean, they're fantastic. They can almost be 6 feet tall. Or maybe most commonly we think of those, you know, those plates, those circular chargers, you know, covered with flowers and birds, blue and white, gorgeously painted. Sometimes we see them mounted on walls. But simple, like defining the term, it's tin glazed earthenware. It's not porcelain. Delftware is tin glazed earthenware that was made in the Dutch Republic from roughly the 1620s to about 1840. It's really one of those defining arts of the Dutch Golden Age, together with Vermeer and Rembrandt. But it's art that we can, you know, hold in our hands.
You point out that those tiles were made sort of throughout Holland, but the Delftware was made in a very specific area and required years of training to do.
Absolutely. It's, again, it's something that looks so simple, but when you dive, you know, if you go beyond the surface, you know, you'll learn that, you know, behind those beautiful, simple brick facades in Delft were 30 to 50 specialists, each with their own skill, which they would train since they were probably a child, each step towards making that one dish or bowl or fantastic work of art, like a tulip, you know, one of those tulipieres. They could take, you know, weeks to create. Some were simply, you know, made for utilitarian wares. Others were really works to be admired and seldomly touched. So it's a broad variety, but yes, it is actually a very complicated process.
Well, before we talk about some of the history you unearthed behind these pieces of art, give us a brief overview of this book. What are readers going to find here?
Beyond Blue and White is an art history, but it's also a blue and white mystery. So it's all about the rediscovery of a group of works and the secrets that they hold. It's about, you know, looking beyond what seems maybe purely decorative and discovering the larger stories of, you know, global trade and cultural exchange. And actually for me, which was surprising, you know, as an art, you know, I've been in the art world for more than 30 years, you know, at Christie's on the Antiques Roadshow, but discovering really the depth of women's experience that's tied to this, you know, to this decorative art.
In this book, you start on the journey by a collection of Delftware that came to light in New York. Tell us about that discovery and sort of the moment when you decided, you know, there's a story behind here that needs to be told.
Oh my goodness. So as I said, I've been an art advisor, you know, in the auction world for more than 30 years. So just before COVID, I was asked to come see a collection of Dutch Delftware that was the property of a women's organization that was founded during New York's Gilded Age. And it was in a, you know, quiet townhouse on a side street in the Upper East Side. And what I thought was going to be maybe a handful of those, you know, those beautiful plates turned out to be more than 75 pieces of rare 17th and 18th century Dutch Delftware. And it opened the doors because these pieces were gorgeous. But what I also discovered were the lives of the women who made, you know, were the owners of the potteries, you know, who were the women who brought these pieces to this collection. And it opened a door, Dan, to some unexpected surprises. And what I initially did was I was asked to create a lecture based on, you know, my findings for the organization. And I believe in serendipity because it was COVID. So the lecture was, you know, online, and it was seen by a literary agent who called me up again, you know, out of the blue and said, "You don't know me, but I think what you have here is something, a greater story that should be told." And so I considered her offer, and it turned to 5 years of research across the East Coast, England, and of course the Netherlands, and beyond Blue and White is this journey that I took.
Well, tell us about some of the women you discovered who were responsible for creating this art and making it popular. Because from what I gleaned from the book is that these women actually wielded a lot of power in a time when women were marginalized.
Yeah, it was surprising on so many levels, because what I unearthed and what was actually very surprising to Europeans in the 1600s was that Dutch women actually had much more agency than we could have possibly ever imagined. I mean, young Dutch girls were in the same schools as boys. Legally, they had many more rights than other Europeans. There was no primogeniture. So, you know, a young woman would inherit equally as her brother. But then she also had this tremendous education that included, if you're ready for this, financial literacy. So young women were taught how to balance the books. They were trained in business. So they're coming to the table, Dan, with some pretty remarkable skills. And so the Delftware, you know, market reflects how, you know, young women could found their own potteries. If they inherited a pottery, if they were partners with their husband, they could easily step into that role, you know, as owner. And what I found out was that 1 in 5 of these potteries were owned by women throughout the 17th and 18th centuries. And the women that I met were truly remarkable, because of course we know Vermeer, you know, from Delft, but we don't know about women, a woman named Barbara Rodeville, who was 5 years older than Vermeer, grew up 3 blocks away from him in Delft. We know exactly from his fantastic archives where she lived, who her parents were, where, you know, the streets that she walked. She survives the famous thunderclap, which was the famous explosion in 1654 when a third of Delft went up in a gunpowder explosion. It was the largest man-made explosion at the time in the history. And she not only survives the famous thunderclap, but she goes on to found her own pottery. And she joins even the Guild of St. Luke, which was headed up by Vermeer. So this is an incredible woman who defies the odds. And, you know, and her legacy was a business that survived for more than 100 years. And then fast forwarding to the 19th century, you know, we hear about J.P. Morgan and Cornelius Vanderbilt, but what about their wives, you know? And what was intriguing to me was that, you know, it was New York's, you know, Gilded Age. You know, women couldn't vote, of course, and they weren't invited to the museum table. You know, they weren't the Metropolitan Museum wouldn't have their first female trustee until the 1930s. So what did Mrs. Cornelius Vanderbilt II and Mrs. J.P. Morgan do? They founded their own museum in the 1890s, which they could run and oversee. And it turns out that this collection of Delftware was a part of their museum. So it kind of takes us from maker to preservationist, you know, museum founder in one, you know, arcing narrative. And I'd never seen anything like this in my life. And, you know, these are incredible women in a variety of, you know, fascinating roles.
I'm curious about the role of Queen Mary II. Tell us about how she plays into this story.
Oh, yeah. And you're hitting it right in the center. I mean, she is that pivotal You know, she was of course, a young English princess who marries into the Dutch royal family. She becomes wife, of course, of William III, who's then brought back to England. So they come back as King William and Mary, you know, the duo that we know well. But she is actually fascinated by the Dutch Delftware, and she becomes its greatest patron, and she elevates it through her commissions, not just in the Dutch Republic, but when she becomes Queen of England, she brings that back with her to England. So she's responsible not only for the creativity and giving patronage, you know, to, you know, break the boundaries of tin glaze earthenware, make monumental sculptures, which we can still see, you know, you and I can see the few remaining pieces, you know, that are out at Hampton Court, just outside of London. She's responsible. She's that catalyst for not just artistic creativity, but the spreading of the popularity of this blue and white, which, you know, you and I see, you know, so often, you know, throughout, you know, not just in Europe, but in America, in our former Dutch and English territories primarily, but spreading, you know, west actually through the Midwest. So she's, you know, again, another pivotal female who's a part of this great story of Delftware.
Tell us a bit about the research. And I'm curious how you were able to trace these works of art back to where they were created. Were there some sort of like pottery manufacturer marks that would tell you where they came from, or was it much harder than that?
Oh, gosh. So the beauty of this, and I really feel like we're in the, you know, a golden age our own, you know, in terms of research, archives, information, marks, as you said. We have this constellation of, you know, fascinating, you know, facts. And so there are great, I mean, we've been, you know, historians have been documenting marks for really the sort of the study of these marks really begins in the 19th century when basically ceramics started to be seen as a work of art itself. And so there's considerable scholarship starting in the mid 19th centuries, like documenting, right, these marks, documenting the names, you know, going through the archives. You have just a variety of sources. I was using everything, right, from looking at marks, but then, you know, going into, you know, the manuscripts of the Delft archives themselves. Where did they live? You know, what are the, you know, the everyday, you know, birth and death records? Where can we find out, you know, what was other examples? Even looking at fine art, looking at paintings from the period, looking at, and I love this, I have this one book that I couldn't put down, which was a late 17th century cookbook. How were ceramics used in everyday life? And you're looking at these incredible, broad variety of sources when you're trying to, you know, create more color, you know, in terms of the background and the stories. And I feel like we're surrounded by such a huge amount of information right now. And I think the fun of it and actually the task at hand is how do we connect those dots? Because, you know, and I think that's the greatest role of historians. We have AI, we have all these great resources, but really how we connect those dots to redefine how we look at history is, I think, the next fascinating, you know, subject for historians. It's all there at our fingertips.
And this artwork tells a history that the history books don't. So you can get a fuller picture of actually what was going on during a particular time period by the story that these works of art tell.
Absolutely. I mean, I think objects are really, again, it's history that you hold in your hands. And so, I mean, the books that I enjoyed when I was a student were, you know, there's Witold Rybczynski's, his analysis of home, you know, what is our relationship with these objects? You know, how did they become, you know, what is the greater picture of how objects related to, you know, to our lives, reflect our lives, reflect, you know, the immediate history. So the study of material culture, I think, is invaluable, you know, and enlightening, and it just brings the history to life.
The story of Delftware and all the people behind it is fascinating, but this is a story which I think would be fascinating for anyone who wants to learn to have a greater appreciation of art and objects and not think, oh, that's pretty, that's attractive. But think about the history behind it and the people behind it. So you much more fully appreciate what you're looking at.
Oh, there's so much there. There's so many more secrets to be, you know, revealed, I think, every day. Yeah, I encourage everyone just to reach out into your own homes. You know, maybe it's a piece that, you know, your grandmother had in her home, or, you know, going even further back. You know, find out, you know, even about your immediate family, you know, why is this object in our family, and how is it connected to like the greater, you know, cultural history of even the past, you know, few decades. I think it's fascinating.
I also want to point out that the book, in addition to the text, has photographs and diagrams and lots of additional information to help you more fully understand this story and the history.
Yeah, I hope that the images like just bring everyone happiness, because there is truly nothing like walking into a room of blue and white. There's something in your brain that just lights up, you know, that cobalt, that tin glaze, that, you know, the reflections of, you know, light on ceramic surfaces. I mean, it's a magic experience. So I hope that, you know, through photography, you know, we can even get a taste of it. But we have some pretty great collections, even in the United States, that you can visit in person. I know the Nelson Atkins has maybe a couple of pieces, but I think then heading to the East Coast, you know, come, you know, go to Philadelphia, see those period rooms, you know, of, you know, that bring you, you know, right into Holland in the 17th century, or, you know, step into the Met, or head up to Boston and see the delfware together with the paintings that were created at the time. So you're seeing the fine and decorative arts together, you know, in concert as they would have been in the 17th century. You know, we have some great resources on this side of the Atlantic, too.
To learn more, the book is Beyond Blue and White, The Hidden History of Delftware and the Women Behind the Iconic Ceramic by Genevieve Wheeler Brown. Genevieve, thank you for talking with me today.
Oh, Dan, this was such a pleasure. I've been really happy to be with you.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.